Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
We've put together a beautiful show for you today. Bob Kessler, executive producer, is here to tell us more about what you will learn.
You know, Robert, there's this effort to bring back coal, but just as we've been working on getting beyond coal, maybe we should rethink all of this because we've been finding out some of the health problems that are no longer happening in areas where coal-fired plants have been shut down. So there's a big study about all of this. Also, we all probably saw the video about shampoo bars from the cosmetics company Lush. That video went viral, made for big sales for Lush. We'll get the story behind the story.
All coming up on this week's edition of Green Sense. It's the hope of just about anyone who does anything on the internet that it'll go viral. But even better, when it does and helps raise awareness about an important issue like plastic pollution. The cosmetic company Lush recently created a video to promote shampoo bars, which are like a bar of soap for your hair and don't need to be contained in a plastic bottle. So there's no plastic waste. That video helps sell thousands of the bars in a matter of days and brings attention to an important issue. Someone who was involved in the creation was Katrina Polos with Lush, and she joins us now. Welcome, Kat.
Hi, so nice to be here.
Were you surprised at the huge response the video received?
I would say yes. And no, products without packaging isn't something that's new for Lush. We've been doing it for years. And we're just really happy that such a large amount of people are finally now realizing how crucial products like shampoo bars are for preventing more plastic waste from ending up in our waterways.
I imagine Lush has created similar videos for other products before. Have you?
Yes, we have. We do lots of how it's made videos. Consumers seem to really like that. And those are going behind the scenes into our manufacturing facilities to see the exact fresh ingredients that are going in, how they're made, meet the compounders that hand make all of the products. So yeah, those types of videos do great.
Why do you think this one took off the way it did?
I would say that in the last year, and even just in the last few months, I've personally been seeing a huge increase of conversations just being had on social media, across different brands and different industries, across consumers, all about, you know, the detrimental effects of plastic pollution and excess packaging. So I think it's just a really hot topic right now, and consumers are eager to learn and hear more. Especially when there's a strong call to action for them to follow suit with. I would also say that aligning with respected third parties is also key. So Attention is the publication that posted the video, and they're very well known for educating viewers on important global issues that Lush is very familiar with. So the same kind of issues and values that Lush embodies through our business practices and our product invention. So having a trusted social media platform like Attention speaking on our behalf really, really helped to spread the word, especially to new audiences that may have never heard of Lush before.
One of the challenges when something goes viral is keeping up with demand. How were you able to keep up with demand?
Yeah, so it is a bit harder for us because we do source all of our fresh ingredients from small grassroots farmers and suppliers. So, you know, if something goes out of stock, we can't just simply turn around and produce more that quickly. So it has been a bit challenging. We've had a few of our shampoo bars go out of stock and this past week, and a day or two later, we were able to get more up online. So it's been hard to keep up with, but we've definitely been doing it. Our sales over the past week went up 130%, which again, I mean, when it's viral, you don't know what's going to happen, right?
Yes. So it's hard to plan.
It's definitely been tricky to keep up with. And since the video went up on Saturday afternoon, we've sold 38,000, almost 39,000 shampoo bars.
What advice do you have for companies or organizations hoping to go viral?
That is a very good question. So although I'm sure every brand hopes to know the secret behind viral success, I feel like there really isn't a known algorithm or how to. And if there is, I would love to hear what that is. But I don't say we know it. Again, I say it would have to do with the conversations currently being had across industries and brands about plastic pollution, working with a respected third party such as Attention that is known for educating their viewers. And again, with shampoo bars, these have been around for over 20 years. Lush has had them since the very beginning. They're a classic Lush product. And over the past, 20 years, we've just stayed true to our values. And
Kat, you don't have any advice that you'd offer a company?
I would say stay true to your values and stay true to your ethics and hope that consumers value those and want to support you. So no, other than that.
My guest is Kat Polos with Lush, and we're talking about having your video go viral to raise awareness about environmental issues. Kat, you've eliminated the plastic shampoo bottle, which is fantastic. But there's other things that have to be included in your packaging. So tell me a little bit about how your bars are packaged, and have you been able to eliminate plastic from the whole supply chain?
Yes. So from the shampoo bars, we definitely have, there's no plastic involved with making them. And then once they're made, they're put into a box with either our compostable and biodegradable packing peanuts, or with a little bit of soap paper on top, which again is compostable. And then they're packaged in our recycled cardboard boxes and sent out to our shop. And yeah, so that's the supply chain there.
So tell me a little bit about the economics. One reason we all use plastic is it's cheap and it's readily available. How does that impact the cost of your product by going to this paper packaging?
Yeah, so it's actually saved us a lot of money by not having to purchase those with plastic bottles that liquid shampoo would be going into. So to put it into perspective, last year we sold 1.1 million shampoo bars, and meaning we prevented 3 million recycled plastic bottles from potentially going into waterways, which then means we saved about $470,000 on not having to purchase plastic bottles for the liquid shampoo to go into.
Well, I really commend you, and I am amazed at how much plastic is used in packaging and how long it's taken to tip the scale to start looking at alternatives. What other efforts is Lush making when it comes to sustainability?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. So we actually have here at our headquarters, we have an entire large sustainability team, and they work around the clock and are completely dedicated to finding sustainable solutions and alternatives to all of our operations, from our manufacturing facilities to inside our retail shops around North America, even how our products are shipped. So again, the compostable packing peanuts, that would have been something that they had worked on and come up with. We also have a team called the Sustainable Lush Fund. It was founded in an effort for us to move beyond simply buying just fair trade and organic ingredients and instead move towards developing supportive relationships with the communities and the people we source our ingredients from. So we have sustainable farming and regenerative community projects in four different countries currently, in which we have created organic alternatives to your typical conventional agriculture while supporting those local growing communities.
Well, finally, from a functional perspective, what are the advantages of using a shampoo bar? And will my hair look its fullest when I use it? A shampoo bar instead of pouring it out of the plastic bottle?
Totally. Yeah. So consumers love our shampoo bars. We have 12 different ones. Each of them have different fresh ingredients in them. They have different essential oils in them. All of those fresh ingredients and essential oils will help your hair in a different way, just depending on what you're looking for and how you want your hair to feel and your perfect hair day. What does that look and feel like? And there will be a shampoo bar for you. So if you're wanting your hair to look and feel a little fuller, then maybe Scenic shampoo bar would be for you. It has lots of sea salt in it, and it's a great one for summer. So I would recommend that one for you.
Well, thank you very much. I don't have enough hair to use shampoo, so no matter what I use, I'm not sure it'll be fullest. But we appreciate your effort, and congratulations on making sustainability part of your core values.
Thank you so much. I was so happy to speak with you, and thank you for helping us spread the good word.
That's Katrina Polos with Lush, with the story behind the recent viral video on shampoo bars. I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. Subscribe to our podcast when you visit greensensefarms.com.
Bob Kessler, executive producer of Green Sense Radio. Every week, we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports Green Sense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive, so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together Green Sense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. Takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep Green Sense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at Green Sense Radio, thank you. Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Known for years that coal-fired power plants have an impact on the environment, but we're still learning about the specific impact to human health. that coal-fired power plants might have. Recent research shows closing coal-fired power plants can increase fertility and decrease the number of preterm births for people living nearby. We're joined by Dr. Joan Casey with the University of California at Berkeley, whose research is focused on this issue. Joan, welcome to Green Sense.
Thanks for having me.
What specific chemicals do coal-fired power plants emit that impact human health?
So these power plants actually emit quite a few different things, ranging from sulfur dioxide to nitrogen oxides, and then also things like lead and mercury, which we know can harm health.
And what is the process or the source for these emissions?
So when there's combustion going on in the coal power plant that we're using to produce electricity, some of these things can be emitted. They're coming out of the smokestack. So if you're driving by one of these power plants, you've probably seen this visually in the air. And those particulates and other health-harming compounds can actually move up to 100 kilometers away from the site of the coal power plant.
So mainly this is all the particulates and pollutants from burning the coal? There's no other processes that are emitting chemicals?
The thing that we're most concerned about here and what we capitalized on our study is the air pollution that's coming out of the smokestack.
So you mentioned that the distance or radius of influence on human health is about 100 kilometers?
So that's, of course, a gradient. So people living much closer are going to be much more affected. But it's true that particulates from these power plants can travel up to 100 kilometers, although we wouldn't expect too much of a health consequence from that. Rather, people living within maybe 10 kilometers would be the most impacted, and that's what we studied here.
And that's about 5 to 6 miles is what you're exactly considering your target zone of influence. Okay. So we've been using coal power plants for a long time. What took so long to find out about these specific health issues?
Well, recently in the United States, we've been retiring some of these coal power plants. So previously, it was a little bit hard to study because we, in scientific research, like to randomize groups to different levels of exposure. But we can't randomize people to environmental pollution saying these 10 people will receive pollution and these 10 people will not. That's not ethical. But recently we've had these coal power plant retirements that effectively randomize people to being exposed or unexposed. So we're able to use this natural experiment of the coal plant turning off to conduct these kinds of health studies that we couldn't do before.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. What is it about the coal that causes health problems in babies?
Well, our study isn't really able to answer that question, but we have some hypotheses. And as we talked about earlier, these plants are emitting a variety of different air pollutants that we know are health harming. And so we're assuming that by removing some of those air pollutants among these populations living nearby, we're able to actually see these improved health outcomes. So mainly an air pollution pathway is what we're thinking about here.
And what is the cost in dollars because of children being born preterm? Did you study that or look at that?
So we're not economists, but people have run those numbers, and it's hundreds of millions of dollars every year worldwide. So the fact that rates of preterm birth have actually gone up slightly in California in the last couple of years means we still have a long way to go in improving preterm birth outcomes. So these sorts of studies can help inform the importance of focusing on these early life outcomes like preterm birth.
My guest is Dr. Joan Casey with the University of California at Berkeley, and we're talking about her research on the impact of coal-burning power plants on human health. Could this research be used in supporting the closure of coal-fired power plants?
It's certainly a piece of evidence that policymakers and others could use when trying to decide how we want to produce electricity in the United States. So if closing these coal power plants has an additional health benefit beyond what we've previously thought about, that might be important to incorporate into some of these decisions as we decide between coal or natural gas or even renewables moving forward.
What about abating the emissions? Is that a solution?
So that certainly would be helpful. There are different things that power plants can do to reduce the levels of emissions. One thing that a lot of coal power plants have done that's been required by the Environmental Protection Agency is installing sulfur dioxide controls. And so that can vastly reduce the amount of sulfur dioxide emissions, but it doesn't necessarily get rid of all emissions. And so while that might be helpful, perhaps moving forward, especially when we start to consider other factors like climate change and the contribution of coal power plants to carbon dioxide emissions, we might want to move to other electricity and energy sources.
I think we'd all like to see coal-powered plants be shut down, but in reality, that's not going to happen overnight. We just don't have the energy capacity to replace those. So coming up with some alternatives short-term until we could gradually phase those out seems more realistic. What about converting them into natural gas? Do you see any emission problems from that?
That's a whole nother story, and that depends a lot on how we're actually getting that natural gas. So in theory, natural gas power plants should be cleaner, particularly for those communities located nearby. There are much lower levels of particulate matter and some of these other air pollutant emissions from natural gas burning plants. But then when you think about where we're actually extracting the natural gas from, whether that's from fracking near where people live in the United States, that opens up a whole nother line of research. But it does seem like a definite gateway between coal and renewable energy. And you're totally right. We still have, I think, over 350 active coal power plants in the United States. And so there's many opportunities down the road.
You found a lot of these health issues with people living near coal-fired power plants. We talked about that 10-kilometer radius is sort of the hot zone. But what about people living further away? Did you see impacts, but at a lesser degree?
So we looked at two different levels, people living within 5 kilometers or about 3 miles, and then people living 5 to 10 kilometers or about 6 miles away. And so in both of those groups, we saw reductions in preterm birth after the power plants turned off. We didn't look at a farther away distance. We actually used a group of people living 10 to 20 kilometers to help us control for other factors that might have changed during the study period, like the housing crisis or the Great Recession that was going on during our study. So we can't say much about people living farther away, but we did see this kind of exposure-response relationship between the closest and the second closest groups. So we'd anticipate people living farther away would have even less of a change in health as the result of these power plants turning off.
Most areas have prevailing winds. Did you take those into account with the wind blowing in a predominant direction at a higher percentage of the time and seeing maybe different rates of disease based on those prevailing winds?
Exactly. So we might think that people living downwind of these power plants would have more air pollution from the power plant showing up at their homes. And so we did try to take that into account. We had a lot of data on wind direction and wind speed, and we looked at our study population and subset to just those living downwind of the power plants. And while we saw a greater reduction in preterm birth among those populations, it wasn't statistically significant in the study because we didn't have enough people in that category to really get a good estimate. But I think in the future, particularly in other states that have much larger coal power plants than we had here in California, that'll be an important thing to look at.
Well, you, as you mentioned, your research was done in California. Could this apply in other areas where they're shutting down coal-fired plants? Or do you think there was some bias with it being done in the state of California?
My guess would be that this applies to other states in the United States. We've seen evidence from Pennsylvania from other colleagues, where they've looked at a single large power plant shutting down in Pennsylvania and improvements in birth outcomes downwind of that power plant. So we know that something similar has gone on in Pennsylvania, and it's likely that this would apply to other states, but we're hoping that this research sparks some other studies that will evaluate some of these other coal power plant retirements that are going to go on in the coming years.
In closing, is there anything you'd like to add to inform our audience?
Just that this study lets us know that the possibility is there. If we retire these coal power plants, we can very likely see a reduction in preterm births nearby. We saw this reduction go from 7% on average when the power plants were operating to just 5.1% preterm births after the power plants turned off. So that's a fairly significant reduction in preterm birth, an area that we're still trying to learn about and still trying to prevent here in California and nationwide.
Joan, thank you very much for joining us, and good luck with your future research.
Thanks very much.
That's Dr. Joan Casey with University of California, Berkeley, talking about coal power plants and some of the health problems experienced by people living nearby. This is Robert Colangelo with GreenSense, where you can subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com. How will we define success in the future? Will it be economically with dollars? Will it be environmentally through our conservation efforts? Or will it be on valuing the quality of life? Either way, we'll need innovators who will allow us to do more with less. Bob, who have you found that's blazing a sustainable trail?
We've had this guy on before, Rob Trice from the Mixing Bowl. He's our ag tech expert. Robert, you actually kind of got me to get in touch with him because you said we should do something about CRISPR. And I said, oh, you mean the drawer in your refrigerator where you put all the salad stuff, right? But that's not true. CRISPR stands for?
It's a gene editing technology that stands for clustered, regularly interspaced, short, palindromic repeat. What does that mean? I don't know, but Rob's going to tell us.
He sure will.
Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. Thanks for listening to this edition of Green Sense. Stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Green Sense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright Green Sense Farms, all rights reserved.